everybody. You're listening to the podcast He Stutters, She Asks Him, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I have the opportunity to speak with another amazing guy who's going to share parts of his story. So please join me in welcoming Ray from South Australia. Hey, Ray, how's it going?
Ray Welchman speaking. I live slightly in the hills, but it's only ever so slightly. But to give you an idea, had a couple of koalas in a gum tree in the backyard, which I have never come across before. So that was unusual. But in terms of a job, I'm a systems engineer in a South Australian defence company. I also run workshops called Feel the Fear workshops too. So I'm a licensed Susan Jeffers trainer in South Australia. So I've started in 2012. So I've done about three or four workshops, and I have one coming up in about 2 weeks' time. So I'm pretty excited about that as well.
How did you get involved with that?
Well, it so happened that the course I did for my speech some years ago, one of the textbooks was a book from Susan Jeffers called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. So as it was one of the texts, I, of course, read, or I at least read part of the book, to be honest. And later on, I heard that someone had a license to do her workshops in a different state of Australia. And at that time, I thought, wow, that sounds challenging. A person who has a stutter taking workshops to help other people overcome their fears, for example. So I sort of decided, yep, I have to do this.
Wow, that is so neat. I absolutely love that book, and I have it on my nightstand, in fact, and I look through it frequently to find quotes or make reference to her work whenever I do communication workshops. So it's funny, both of us stutter and we've done things like that to help other people that don't stutter. That's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's great.
So tell me a little bit about your stuttering history. Have you stuttered since you were young?
Yes, absolutely. My parents divorced when I was at a young age. I also had a dad who stuttered as well. Now, there's a lot of people who believe that stuttering has different components. You know, how much of it is learned, how much of it's copied, how much of it plays a helpful part in our lives as children, for example. And of course, as adults, you know, what can we do about that? But yeah, I started at quite a young age, and I still remember those times at school, or those times at those early ages where you just couldn't get the words out, and just the point of I guess other people taking, other kids even taking advantage of it is a bit of a challenge. And I guess we all have stories like that, don't we?
Yes, we certainly do. Were the kids tough? Did they laugh and mimic you?
I remember one time in particular when I was growing up, and the point is, for example, we were playing a game, and one of the points is that whoever spoke up earliest could have an advantage. So, for example, when I started to speak, someone would realize and then cut in and get the words out quicker than what I could. So I guess you really felt disadvantaged from the point of even in some of the games where you could have needed to speak quickly as a part of the game, that you couldn't, and therefore someone would take advantage of you.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that your dad stuttered.
Yes, he did.
Did you two talk about it when you were a kid?
I never spoke about my speech. Even when it would come up as I was growing up through my teenage years, you would really try to avoid the question. So I guess I was in denial, I don't think you'd even call it denial. Well, you would. I guess you pretended that it wasn't a problem. I mean, you knew it was, but you tried to hide it all you could. And when the subject come up, I would sometimes go bright red and just want to hide under a rock, you know. And
yeah.
We changed the subject, you know, type of a thing.
Yeah. You know, that's so funny that you say that, because that is me to a T. When I first started stuttering, I'm told by my mom that I started stuttering around 5. So 3 years after learning to talk, I started stuttering. And unfortunately, I received early negative messages from my father and from a kindergarten teacher. So those early disapproval messages basically led me to being covert for most of my life, trying to hide it, feeling like I was successful in hiding it. But obviously I wasn't, but I believed that by not talking about it, I was successful in pulling it off. So you use the word denial. That is very much what I felt for so many years. I was in denial of the fact that hiding my stuttering bothered me. You know, it wasn't so much that I was trying to hide my stutter. It was that I pretended that, you know, none of this bothered me, which was couldn't be further from the truth. So it's interesting that you, you know, said almost the same thoughts that I've had for many years.
Absolutely. And I remember when I did the Maguire course here in Australia, which I did a lot later in life, actually about just over 10 years ago. And that was the first time where I really confronted the idea of talking about my speech. And I guess when you get into a group and everybody either has a stutter or is, well, everybody in that course actually did have a stutter, so we could really speak openly, and for the first time you realized, wow, I'm not alone. And it's quite incredible to be openly speaking about your stuttering for the first time, and it actually took me all that time to be able to do that.
Was your entry into the McGuire course the first time that you had also met, besides your father, other people who stuttered?
I'd probably come across, up till that time, probably about three people in my whole life who stuttered or who I knew stuttered. And one of them I only learned, I attended a particular church at that time, and there was another girl, in fact, who was in sort of the group of friends I was in with, and I actually didn't know she stuttered until one day in the car we were all driving up. I think we were going to a camp at that stage, and I heard her speak and I heard her stutter, and I actually didn't know. So I wasn't ultra close to her, but I was very surprised that I didn't pick it up before that time. So, but yeah, there were probably only maybe three or four people that I really had come across who had a stutter, and usually it wasn't close people who I knew. There was only one person that was probably reasonably close by the way of association, but the others, no. I just came across very quickly in passing, and they had a stutter. So it really did feel like I was pretty much on my own.
Mm. Yeah, I can relate to that as well. I did not reach out for support and some therapy myself until 6 years ago. And 6 years ago was the first time that I ever met another person who stuttered.
Wow.
And that, yeah, it just blew my mind. Not only was it eventually liberating for me, but I'll admit it was very overwhelming. My first weeks and months of attending a support group for the first time, all I did was cry because it was like confronting. It was confronting myself, which I had never done before through other people. And to this day, it still amazes me that I had never met anybody else until my 40s that also stuttered. So you can imagine my sense of feeling alone was very real to me, because nobody that sounded like me, I had never met anybody that had sounded like me as a young person and as a young adult. So
wow. You know, I can, in terms of that point about crying, I think, wow, you know, for all those years you've held stuff within you that you really haven't felt free to talk about, and to a point, you know, we feel ashamed about it, and we just the point that we are different when we want to be accepted. And is it any surprise how that after, you know, 20 years, 30 years, however, of hiding and trying to protect, that suddenly, you know, it all comes out, and my goodness, you know, is it surprising that we cry? Or just, you know, there has to be a release after all that time, doesn't there?
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it too. A release, because maybe you can relate to this as well. I mean, growing up, you know, with a stutter, and certainly in times that were a little different than they are now, I was never allowed to express my emotions. You know, we got yelled at if we cried, or, you know, because that was a sign of weakness. So, to just have that release was just incredibly overwhelming. I just didn't know how to deal with it for quite a while.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, you know, I want to go back and ask you, the girl that you were surprised that she stuttered, you were surprised that you hadn't picked that up. You were in the car with her?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you say anything to her? Did you react? Did you say, like, oh, I stutter too?
Well, it was interesting because there were two people in the front. So there were two girls in the front, and there were a few of us in the back of the car. I think there were the guys in the back and two girls in the front, I think, from what I can remember. And with this girl, Julie, there was just a conversation happening. I think it was in the front, and I'm not really sure exactly what was talked about, but I heard it, and I was gobsmacked. I'm sitting in the back going, oh my goodness, you know, somebody else that stutters is right in this car with me. And I'm not sure what I thought, because I wouldn't have even wanted to really speak to her about it. It was like, oh, you know. And I guess it was strange. I didn't really approach her about it, but we had a mutual friend. And what struck me is that there was a friend, her name was Cherie, who had two friends, basically, who had a stutter at that time. And I thought, well, gee, I never knew anybody. So that was quite an amazing eureka, you know, sort of point. Wow.
Yeah, because most people don't encounter anybody that stutters in their lifetime.
That's
because
right.
It's so rare. Wow. So Ray, what brought you to the McGuire program 10 years ago?
Well, that's really interesting. For example, I had a number of treatments when I was growing up. I mean, a few. I started when I was about 10 years old. I was taken to a place in Adelaide called the Adelaide Children's Hospital, and they had a psychology area. So what my dad did is he somehow teed me up to go and talk to a psychologist. So you got to remember, that's a child sort of psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really amazing, because I remember going in and speaking to this guy, and he'd take me into this huge room where there were games galore, table tennis table, bow and arrow, basketball, soccer balls, you name it, cricket sets. And what he used to do is he used to get me to ask me what I'd like to play a game, and I couldn't really work out what he was doing. But then as an adult, I think it was more of, he tried to get me comfortable and doing things, and then tried to speak to me and elicit the information to try and work out how he could help me with my stuttering. But I'm honestly not sure it did anything, but I played a few good games, so I guess that was something good. Later on, I went to a hypnotherapist, and which was a bit weird, but at that time, you know, Dad was going to pay for it, and it's pretty expensive here in Australia. So I went there probably four times, and it was almost like I was laying down on a couch. and he would speak in his very calm voice, and as he would speak, he would put these thoughts and ask you to imagine things. Imagine you were at the beach, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I went through that point of listening to him, and he was asking me questions too. And I'd take cassette tapes home, actually, and listen to them while I was relaxed. And again, I'm not sure what that did, but I still stuttered afterwards, so I guess it didn't really achieve the desired effect. So then I also went to, it's like a hospital, which had a speech therapist in it, a speech therapist in it. So I went to this person who was, actually I did go to one other speech person prior to that, and it was horrible. I mean, the first time I went in there, he made me pick up the phone and book some travel arrangements, and he sat there with his pen and paper counting syllables per minute or whatever they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was shocking. You know, I felt so uncomfortable trying to speak on the phone to some stranger organizing travel arrangements, and I just hated it. And then he gave me a list of words. So he probably listened to me speak and thought, oh, he's having problems with that word and that word, beauty. You know, we'll give him a list to practice at home. And it was just dreadful. And honestly, I went three times and was glad to slam the door on him, you know.
So those early experiences with the psychologist and then the hypnotherapist and then the speech therapist, were they did you go because you wanted to or because your dad wanted you to?
With the early ones, it was certainly because my dad wanted me to go. And I guess there was, thinking like I was at that young age, I'm not sure what I expected. I think I got the idea that this was going to be helpful in some way to my speech, but I can't recall what my expectation was. But I did go through the cassettes, for instance, so I was pretty much interested in trying to follow directions, I think, at that stage. The last one I didn't talk about was another speech therapist that I went to, which was in a hospital, and I chose to go to that one. And he was really good, but I got to the point where I was pretty comfortable and I could read quite easily. And he called in a person that wasn't a speech therapist, but they were too in the psychoanalysis type area, the psychology. And she was great because she came in and said, look, I want you to try to do particular things at that time. For example, she would get me to picture things as I was speaking, and she'd also get me to try and think of other things, for example, while I was speaking. So she was really holistic. She came and said, oh, have you ever tried doing this? Let's see what that will do for your speech. But again, I didn't keep the exercises up, so I sort of lost out. But at that time, I chose to do that particular treatment.
So at some point, these treatments, these therapies that didn't really work very much, at some point you made another decision that you were going to try the McGuire program.
Well, at that point with that last one, I got to the point where I really gave up hope. I guess I accepted that, okay, I'm stuck with this problem. I'm not going to go anywhere career-wise.
Mm.
You know, it's a hopeless situation, and I've just got to deal with it. The speech problem's never going to go away. And pretty much I just have to learn to cope with this. And coping, as you know, sometimes it's not easy. Going through the avoidances, the tricks, the looking away as you're speaking, hoping that they won't notice you, struggling, that, you know, all the tricks we do. And it was my brother-in-law, actually, who saw the program on TV on something called A Current Affair. So he recorded it and slipped me the copy. And really, when I watched that copy, that I guess that residing that point of hopelessness tended to drop slightly. I got a glimmer of hope. I thought, wow, these people, you look at the before shots and they're, you know, stuttering away very overtly, and then to watch them standing up confidently speaking to a crowd, I thought, oh, I want this. Is it? But the thought is it possible? That's always the thought. It was, wow, maybe if this is possible, then I should do it. So I emailed the director at that time because there was no way I was going to ring up. And it was scheduled in a different state of Australia called Victoria. And it wasn't cheap, but I thought, wow, if this is going to do something, do you really put a price on it? And so I did it, and it was the best thing I ever did with my speech.
And that was 10 years ago?
Yeah, that was around, actually a bit longer, that was around the year 2000.
So what helped the most? I mean, what helped with the McGuire program that hadn't helped with the earlier therapies?
To answer that, I think there's a few things. The number one was that you were given a technique of speaking. So I don't know if you've heard too much about the technique, but basically we learn a new way of breathing. So instead of breathing like we normally have, which has sort of become a bit chaotic over the years, we've used our breathing wrong. So the idea is to start by, if you like, breathing from your ribs, which is called costal breathing, they call it. And what that gives you is a pretty powerful way of breathing to start to allow good speech. And then they give you what is called a checklist. So you start from pausing, breathing out all your air, then taking a nice breath and speaking at the top of your breath. Then you release your air again after you've been speaking. And there's a sort of a basic cycle of speaking. But the main focus is getting this breathing right, this rib breathing. But so that technique, that mechanical or a physical technique, starts you off. So you get to the point where, wow, I can start to say these words. And you start very simply. But then it goes on to, okay, now we've got that down pat. We need to start to look psychologically on how we perceive other people, how we look at ourselves. So it's a pretty holistic approach to looking at the physical and the psychological, which is something that sometimes, especially in the speech therapy I did, it was all about what is your mouth doing. But as we know, there's a lot more to it than that. And
sure is.
And the greatest point from that was actually continually saying your name throughout the course. You are sitting opposite another person. You have to have good eye contact. You've got to be using technique all the time. And then you get the opportunity to go out and speak to people on the street, which is, whoa, you know, this is crazy. And just the euphoria of coming back after speaking to 100, call them contacts, 100 people, and to just feel so, so good. So your confidence gets a boost. You start to have some tools and strategies to use. And just the inspiration of people that have done the course and the encouragement to go out, join a public speaking group like Toastmasters, to start to answer the phone at home and all those little things that we avoid. It's, you know, it all just was a package and it really worked. And it doesn't work for everybody, but it certainly worked for me and really getting me, giving me hope and getting me back to, I guess, being empowered to make decisions with my speech.
Did people notice that there was a difference with your speech and with Ray just overall?
My wife certainly noticed. When she noticed for a lot of reasons. It wasn't just the big smile when I got back, but this is amazing. But, you know, as a Christian, I think that God has perfect timing for everything. But I'll tell you what happened. Before the course, I was unemployed, so I put out an application for a job here in Adelaide. And of course, I didn't ring up. I did everything by writing, and I had to somehow work out how I could get a job without speaking, and that's pretty difficult. But when I got back from the course, the CEO of this company had called me, and my wife took the message. And on the Monday, so I got back on Sunday night. Monday morning, I picked up the phone, called the grand poobah of the company, this CEO guy, and for the first time in my life, he answered, and I said, "Ray Welchman speaking," in a nice, loud, confident voice. And just to then feel so confident, so larger than life, speaking to this person and then arranging an interview, he said, "Look, I'd like you to come in and speak to you." And when I got to the interview, I felt like I controlled the interview. You couldn't shut me up, Pam. It was like, you know, being free to speak, letting a person who stuttered be free to speak is dangerous. And I got the job. He, by the end of the interview, he said, "Look, you know, you've got the job. Love to have you." And so that was my story. Just the whole turnaround, the whole pivot for me was, it wasn't small. It was huge. And my wife certainly noticed when I'm answering the phone all the time. And then if we went out for dinner, for example, I could ring up for the first time and arrange the reservation. So she certainly noticed, and yeah.
I can hear the emotion and the pride as you tell that part of the story. That, yeah, I can tell that it was huge. and life-changing. I mean, I can hear that. I can hear it in your voice and your tone. And I imagine, even though we can't see each other, I can hear a smile.
You're right, I have one, yeah. Yeah, look, it's really good, isn't it, to look back on your life a bit and be very thankful, you know, and have that gratitude for those twists, for those things that happen, you know, those sliding doors, those things that do set your life on a different course. And yeah, it certainly did. And, you know, with Toastmasters, I am president of Tea Tree Gully Toastmasters, which is a club in South Australia. And, you know, I still have challenges, but the attitude toward them is so different. And, you know, I've been in competitions now where, and I did one recently, and I have it on YouTube, and it's about, do you have what they call a GPS, a car satellite navigation system? I don't know what
yes.
They call it. Yeah.
I have one.
So I have a humorous speech about, we call them TomToms here, or the first brand that come out here was called TomTom. And so it's a little bit of a humorous story, but I just love...
Was that for the humorous speech contest?
Yeah, it was for what they call the division contest. So you go through a club competition, you win that, then you go to an area, which is a collection of clubs, where all the winners from the individual clubs compete together. So I won that, and then I went to the division, and I came second only to a person who had won about five times in the previous 7 years. He had an Indian accent, which they say was a great advantage because he used it well with his humor.
Well, congratulations. I know it's not easy to come out of that comfort zone. I've been in Toastmasters myself for 6 years, so I know that you get accustomed to the comfort of your home club. Mm-hmm. So to do the speaking contests and to go from your club to the area to the division, that's you know, for people that are not familiar with Toastmasters, that's a big deal.
It is. And, you know, if we're not growing, what are we doing, Pam? And I think, you know, the real encouragement is we speak about expanding our comfort zones, and one of the truths actually from Susan Jeffers, and you'll probably remember it, Pam, is the idea that we'll always have fear, or the fear will never go away as long as we're continuing to grow. And I think that's the beauty, that you can now say, yeah, I've got the fear, but wow, look what I'm doing, you know. And that's the exciting point, isn't it? That we can have such a different attitude. And when we speak to people, when we are running workshops, whatever we're doing, we can say, look where I've come from. Did you know that I come from a time where I wouldn't dare stand up in front of anybody? And look what I'm doing now. And we need to be proud of the progress we make. And, you know, we need to really give ourselves and each other a pat on the back. I think what you're doing with these interviews is just fantastic, Pam. And that takes a lot of courage. And my goodness, you do it so well now. And it's probably becoming your comfort zone a little bit too.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that feedback. Believe it or not, it's not really a comfort zone, because I'm constantly talking to different people. And, you know, you would think, okay, well, she's been doing this now for a while. It should be a piece of cake. But when you're meeting and when you're meeting and talking to people, different people from all walks of life, different parts of the world, I sometimes still get that anxiety, You know, I still sometimes get that feeling, I stutter more than this than this person. You know, how's it going to go, or is it going to be okay, or you know, so I still look at this as a fresh opportunity for self-discovery almost every time that I have one of these conversations. But I enjoy it.
You sound like you enjoy it, and you know, just the point of you have a real flow with it. So there's no great pausing where you suddenly stop and think, "Oh my God, what do I say now?" So I think you do it really well, and it certainly is very easy to speak with you. And your point about people not stuttering as much that you might interview, well, we're the only people probably brave enough to get on here. I have to tell you, I was nervous before this because,
Really?
yeah, part of me is thinking, well, you know, how perfect do I have to be here? And it's funny that we still, you know, think that we have to be perfect in some way, or we, you know, and so it's really nice, but you've calmed me down, Pam.
Well, I'm glad for that, and I'm also glad that we finally had the opportunity to connect and to to share with each other, because I do think that's what we've done here. We've shared. It wasn't just me peppering you with questions. We've shared back and forth, and it's been a delight. Thank you so much for being a guest and sharing parts of your story.
You're welcome, Pam, and anytime. And all I can say is that, you know, if all of us and all of those listeners, for example, the idea of feeling the fear and doing it anyway, just as you have done, as I have done, and many other people who you've interviewed, it's just great that we can grow whether the fear is there or not. And it's certainly been a pleasure speaking to you, Pam.
And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.